Hello and welcome back to this conference. My name is Jai Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very pleased to be welcoming the wonderful Alsu Kashapova. Welcome, Alsu.
Hi, Jai. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So you are a holistic transformational coach certified in compassionate inquiry, breathwork, hypnotherapy, and numerous other modalities. Do you want to start by telling us a bit what that means and about your journey and your work and how it supports trauma healing?
Yes, definitely. I love what I do because I help people to come back to their essence, authenticity, and live from that state using various modalities. As you said, the work of Gabor Mate and breath work, various methods, hypnotherapy of Marisa Peer and more. And I turned actually my career from a tech executive. I was leading technology teams before. And then I finally shifted my path and transformed my career as well. And I think the topic of trauma is very much close to me because the longest time I didn't think that I personally had trauma. I come from a very, a normal family. So I thought that my parents were great. They were taking care of me. So I don't need any therapy. I don't need healing. And I also had a belief that I should do everything on my own. And I try to rely on rather positive thinking and kind of overcoming and achieving. So that's why I achieved a really great career. And I realized that a lot of times it would take me one step forward, but it would take so much energy within that I almost felt like two steps back. So it was exhausting and overwhelming go through life like that. And although I had an amazing relationship, career, and lifestyle inside, I felt that emptiness and I felt disconnected from my truth for who I really am. So I started my path, first of all, for myself of healing, and I worked with coaches and therapists and attended lots of retreats. And actually, I worked with people since I was a teenager. I was in NGO, and when I was a student, I was part of leadership student organization. So I think one of the hardest part for me was also to accept that I just want to work with people directly rather than impacting millions of users through tech and things like that. And so, yeah, that's my background and story, how I went into this world of healing and trauma.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I think it's really interesting how you talk about you didn't have like an obvious typical trauma background, right? And you were like, I had a quote unquote normal family, a good career, relationship, things seemed to be going well. Like, why? And then feeling like something was missing, feeling like there was a certain emptiness, that there was, you didn't feel whole, right? And so I'm curious about this theme of wholeness, which I know runs through your work. And you talk some as well in your work about unbecoming as opposed to becoming. Do you want to say some more about that?
Yeah, so as I said, I was relying a lot on positive thinking and personal growth, and lots of messages there is be the next best version of yourself and achieve that next step. So I was very good in that. But I realized that it's never bringing me that fulfillment and that I'm looking for, of that sense of inner peace, that sense of coming back, home, arrival, and presence, that I'm always busy with worrying about the future or thinking how I can do things better, how what could be done. So I felt always this state of maybe not strong anxiety, but rather worry. And I even felt that it's normal to feel this way, that it's part of corporate job, because everyone around feels a little bit like that. So therefore, I didn't consider that I need any kind of special treatment. And I think it's important to talk about these traumas that I probably sometimes call wounding or childhood wounding, because they are not big T trauma, and usually only people who went through some bigger traumatic experiences, they allow themselves to go through that healing journey. And for me, it wasn't obvious that I can also dedicate time, invest money into that. And I really feel that it's the best and the most important that I did. And actually, healing is originated from the same word as wholeness. So I think that we are all in the constant journey to wholeness. And what I felt that is about this part of becoming and unbecoming, it's about that. We were told to be so many things, starting from our culture, families, from how we're supposed to be in relationships and career, as with all the identities. And I think it's just so many expectations. And for me, I experienced it myself. Even I had a moment in my corporate career that I built exactly what I supposed to do. And I realized, okay, so now what? And I needed to rediscover who I am. And it was not about, again, figuring out, who do I need to become? It was rather, what do I don't want in life? What I don't want to be? What is not my true self? What is not my authentic dreams and goals?
Brilliant. No, I think it's really interesting as the way you're describing that, right? That so often, we see all these like inspirational quotes and these things about, becoming the best version, but it's very much it's adding to the shoulds, right? And so there's this term in the spiritual school that I'm a part of called spiritual superego. So superego is another word for like that inner critic, that voice that's constantly judging us and judging others a lot of the time as well. But then as we start like this healing process, or as we try and become the best version of ourselves or something like that, sometimes the voice can switch tones a little bit, but it's still those expectations and the impact of, like you say, the sort of like de developmental and cultural conditioning and that kind of wounding, I think is really important. It's like some people have like experienced big traumatic events where they can pinpoint, but for the vast majority of us and of people, there is, often just it's like lots of little paper cuts almost, or lot of from the expectations and from the telling of how things quote unquote should be, right? So I really appreciate the way you bring that in and the way that you talk about, it's more about freeing ourselves of that and unbecoming rather than becoming something very specific.
Yeah, I just want to add that if some people never thought about their journey, right, and how to identify whether they would like to look into it, one of the identifier could be it's either you don't remember part of your childhood. For me, it was kind of like foggy memories that I don't remember because our mind tend to for kind of repress those memories that are painful. And also, if in your childhood, maybe it's not only about that you had too much of something, too much of abuse or let's say critique, but also not enough care and emotional attunement, not enough touch and attention of parents. So for me, it was surprising that it's also trauma. And I think it's important to also speak about that. And even abuse, it could be emotional, it could be verbal. So a lot of these conditions where we grew up for so many years, lots of time it is originated in childhood, but also could be with parents, of course, and caregivers, but also in school and how we're going through our adolescence period. I think it all impacts what do we think about ourselves, of how, who we are, our identity. So I think unpacking that a little bit gives a little of understanding that, maybe there is something for me to look, especially if you feel that you are maybe disconnected, you don't feel fully alive. And I think I want to remind everyone that everyone deserves to be, to feel that aliveness, wholeness, joy of life, that we are given this life and the beauty of it. But a lot of times we're just experience something that got us disconnected from that sense of wholeness. And I think we all deserve it. So that's why for me, everyone deserves to go through this healing journey.
100%. And I interviewed Catherine Ripley on this conference, talking about, emotional neglect as trauma as well. And again, so I recommend people check out that talk if they want to know more about that path. Now, also, I'm wondering as well, like you talk about this wholeness, right? And this essence and how so often we're disconnected from our authentic true selves. So what are some of the ways that you work with your clients to support people coming back into their essence, coming back into their true selves and their authenticity and into wholeness?
Yeah, I think firstly, if you forgot how it feels, I think like to be just present, just normal, just being happy with who you are in a moment. Firstly, it's good to see what's in the way. So a lot of times, I think that's where I start working with clients. It's let's see what are behaviors and symptomatic behaviors that I call them. Maybe it's anxiety, maybe it's controlling, maybe finding hard to fall asleep, or maybe emotional overeating or addictions. So all of these, they are symptoms. And I think it's a good news because it's not who you really are. In that context, I help my clients to understand how these patterns they've been created in the childhood. And it's kind of a system of beliefs, emotional reactions, and even somatic response. And a lot of times we start believing who we that's the way I am. So for example, I was worried constantly, and I even was called anxious child. So I thought that this is who I am, and it's normal for me to be this way. For example, even achiever could be that coping strategy, and in our society it's even recognized more. So, but if you are continuing achieving without that sense of fulfillment, that probably could be a call that, maybe it's more of the behavioral coping mechanism rather than my sense of wholeness. So I think a lot of times it's understanding how certain behaviors that they feel that is not real you. You know that they are not bringing you into this like presence, more present moment. And most of the people, they know these emotional reactions when you react unproportionally to the current situations. So that's where I usually I recommend to start. And it could be a fun journey because first I thought that we need to shift, let's say, beliefs or shift ourselves. But the good part is that when you start working this way with some parts of you that become this the patterns and coping mechanisms, you can also find the beauty there. The moment you unburden and release some stuck emotions that are connected to that initial wounding, you can also find, actually achieving is something that I enjoy. But how can I achieve from that space and sense of wholeness? Or maybe worrying could have the good side of planning, thinking about details, and it can be useful in a certain situation, but it's not that it's really your identity and who you are. So that's the starting point.
No, I really hear that, how the importance of disidentifying from certain behaviors, right? So like if you have anxious behaviors or you have stress, like that doesn't mean that that's who you are. That is not your essence. That is not the core of your identity and your authenticity. That's just a behavior or a feeling or an emotion or a something. And you know, when it might be caused by patterns and history and trauma or external or internal factors, like the different things that can contribute to that. So it's not about rejecting that either, but it's about not becoming so caught up in that being, you know, the sense of who you are, because there's so much else going on there. So I think that that's really important as a first step, is that bringing in that awareness and disidentifying from that. So then what are some of the other ways that you then support, and once you've got to that point, what are some of the modalities that you can bring in and support people with?
Yeah, I think the next step would be to connect to that essence. So the question would be usually of my clients, okay, if I'm not all of that I'm used to perceive myself, then who am I? And actually, for many people, even I work with people of age of 70, 50, 20, doesn't matter, but it's relevant at any point of life, and it's never too late to answer that. And it could be combination of many things. So then I start working with clients of firstly and identifying values, what really drives you in life, what gives you joy, what are your passions. I like this exercise from the book The Artist's Way of Julia Cameron, 100 Lives. If you had 100 lives, how would you live? Who would you be? And then it's very playful way as well to rediscover yourself. And I believe that it's very experimental phase as well to just try doing something for yourself, for the joy of it, because a lot of times in the society, we're so used to be productive. So I remember that I got used to learning only skills that are useful. And then to do something just for myself, for my joy, for passion, it was something that even I had to relearn, and lots of my clients, they find this as well. And at the same time, there are modalities that can bring you to the expanded state or the state of non-ordinary state of consciousness. And right now, there are many modalities like that, like breath work or even shamanic drums or dancing, singing, hypnotherapy, or even deep connection with yourself in a therapeutic context, in a group, through connection with your loved ones. I think everyone is familiar with some moments in life when you felt that your heart is just a little more expanded, that you can connect to another person or nature or maybe the whole world from that sense of connection. And that's when you feel, aha, I feel arrived. I feel that that's who I am. That's my life. And I really enjoy when people can connect to that sense of themselves, of their truth, of their wholeness and essence. And I believe that right now there are more and more awareness and accessibility to these modalities. And it's really amazing to see that.
Beautiful. No, absolutely. I think that, like you say, there's more and more awareness and integration of these different modalities into the mainstream that can help our consciousness go into these non-ordinary states that you were speaking of. For those unfamiliar, could you say a little bit more about what you mean by non-ordinary states and how, again, they're supportive to trauma healing?
Yes, so it's also called altered state of consciousness or expanded states. But I like that this definition of Stanislav Grof, who came up with this term non-ordinary states when he was experimenting with LSD first time, and they ex discovered that healing could be completely from a different perspective, and it's they started calling it non-ordinary states. And that's where our brain waves are going to a deeper level. So it's not in a normal consciousness state, but our prefrontal cortex is actually less active and more amygdala and other parts of the brain that are connected to emotion and long-term memory, they are more activated. And I think on the sense how it feels, we can feel it from being connected. So I think a lot of times the description that you are being connected to yourself, somehow you feel the connection to your body, or maybe, as I explained, like nature, there is sense of oneness that comes with it. And actually, if you think of it, this expansion could happen in daily life as well. So if you are really present and you're walking by the seaside or just being present in the moment, then suddenly you feel that separation is dissolving, or maybe when you are driving a car and suddenly your consciousness is present with driving, but you're not thinking actively, so you can be somehow more relaxed as well. So that's what is I'm referring to when I talk about non-ordinary states.
Fantastic. I appreciate that explanation. And so, how do these non-ordinary states actually help heal trauma?
So a lot of times we can't access implicit memory easily. So most of the time we can access and remember events, especially traumatic events or woundings. Actually our subconscious mind and our perception is being built starting from when we're in mother's womb, when we are being born as well through the birth process, lots of first beliefs like, am I good enough? Am I welcomed here? Am I safe here? Is it abundant world, or is it that it's always not enough for me here? All of these primary core beliefs are being formed during this very early stages of our human development. First of all, non-ordinary states, they help us access those implicit memories, that stuff that we cannot recall, but they are so important. So through breath work, suddenly a person can reconnect physically, probably just somatically. Body could release certain emotions that have been stuck in some sense in that moment, maybe when you were 2 years old, or just through birth process, and now the body is releasing. Or in hypnotherapy, maybe you can go back to some memories that were traumatic, and you can reframe and heal them in a more safe environment, in a more positive way, using plant medicine or psychedelics. It's also very accessible. And also, our human psyche goes so beyond our biographical aspect into cross-generational, because we carry so many of the history of our ancestors, of our previous generations. We are all connected to certain archetypes, and lots of times through this kind of experiences, people can connect to that sense of unity, or maybe through certain God figures, or maybe even kind of confronting some darker energies and like demons in a certain way. And all of this becomes accessible through these states.
That makes a lot of sense. Like you say, that kind of connecting to the unconscious, right? Like I guess dream states are similar to non-ordinary states, perhaps. And these, yeah, like you say, psychedelics, breath work, drumming. There's all these different ways of going into these states where we're, yeah, by being in the sort of unconscious realms, that it actually supports trauma healing, because we can get to, I forgot the terminology you used, but we can get to other implicit memory, I think is what you said. So that makes a lot of sense. So what are some practices then that people can use on a daily basis to either help get into those states or to help with their healing journey and their healing process?
Oh, I love this question, because whenever it doesn't matter where you are in your journey, I think daily practice is so important. And that's why I'm such a big promoter of a holistic way. I think that it's important to have some intensives with non-ordinary states, but there is also some integration that is necessary. Maybe working with your therapist or coach, or just reflection and journaling. And then there are some daily habits. It's almost like I always use this example that you can't just clean your body for your whole life, taking shower one time. It's constant process, right? Right? Like every day or so, you are taking a shower, and every moment, a few times a day, you wash your hands, and maybe once in a while, you go to proper sauna. So that's the same, I think, with healing. That there are certain practices that we do on daily basis, and this can be, I think, also it's good to see holistic way approaching the mind with a certain questions in the morning, or maybe connecting to your intention, or just thinking about your values. What is it that the value that you want to live today? Because I think it sets the tone for some people. Some higher consciousness books, they really help. Or like reading Krishnamurti or Almas or something. These books, they give us a different perspective on life. I think they set the tone how we then deal with daily situations. Then there is also, I think, physical aspect. And on the daily basis, I definitely recommend some breathing practices. If you are just starting geometrical figure breathing, I think it's the easiest one, like box breathing. The square, when you just inhale, hold your breath, exhale, hold your breath. This is the easiest to remember. Like usually when people come for the first time, they can at least remember this practice. Or for instance, connected breath, like 20 connected breaths that you can do. It creates that expansion, and you will be already experiencing some level of expanded state. And any kind of movement, I think, even taking a walk, swim, dance, jump, whatever that suits you, I think this combination for me is important. And I think every person can decide for themselves. I think it's really joyful experimentation. I like to practice and be my own center, research center. So I usually, if I like something, if I resonate, and I know that people will go through so many speakers, but if you resonate with one thing, just take it and practice for the next week or 10 days. Just keep repeating the same thing over and over. And that's how you create habit. It's also really good to add to your existing ritual already. Maybe you are washing your hands and you do one breath as cleansing breath. And so it's already integrated into your practice. And then maybe weekly, I recommend to take time for yourself on a weekly basis. That is more like could be a date with yourself, or maybe some ritual, whether it's a spiritual, whether it's a session with your therapist, or maybe you just have a journal and reflect. But I think it's just some sense of reconnecting to yourself, because we live in a busy world. The speed of life is just increasing. So sometimes take a moment to slow down, remember who you are, what's important, and come back to your essence. That's so important.
Yeah, amazing. I really appreciate everything you just brought in. There's a few things that really stuck out for me. I love that allegory of like healing and self-care, a bit like the way we wash ourselves, right? Like you need to do it on a regular basis. And, you know, there's some things that you'll do, or even the way we clean our houses, for example, right? Or just the cleaning in general feels like a good one in terms of like cleaning out our psyche, cleaning out our mental health and our well-being. And the way that, you know, there's daily needs, there's things we do multiple times a day, and then there's things we do maybe weekly, and then there's things we do once every month, there's things we do, you know, a couple of times a year. And so I think that that's really important. I also really appreciated what you were saying around, you know, these conferences can be really overwhelming for some people because there's so much material and it's like, oh my God, I need to do it all. Where do I start? And so what you were saying about no one needs to do it all, and no one needs to do it all at once. But if there's something that you particularly connect with, try that and do it for a few weeks, see how it works, and then maybe bring in something else, maybe swap it out for something, you know, depending. But like, again, that tuning in and seeing what works for each individual, as opposed to like a template of everyone must do all these things in order to heal, which can feel impossible. You know, most of our speakers are speaking about modalities that have supported them in their journey. You know, you're talking about these combined modalities that you found really helpful. And I really appreciate you sharing them. And I really appreciate everyone who contributes to these events and can bring in different elements. But then for the listeners and viewers, people need to, yeah, find what works for them. And I also really appreciated the piece about integration, because I think that that's something that can get overlooked very easily. And when we're doing these new practices and we're on this journey, like especially when we're doing like sort of spiritual work or work that takes us into this sort of like states of non-ordinary states, as you're calling them, coming back into an ordinary state requires some integration, right? And sometimes we can have an overload. And so, you know, in the practices you gave and the examples you gave, most of them didn't sound like, they sounded like just daily examples for life, for better connecting with oneself, for getting more into a state of wholeness and authenticity, and, you know, finding more ease and capacity in life to function, to get through, so that we're not operating from a state of stress, like you were describing your life used to look like, right? And I think that that's wonderful to bring in all these tools. And I'm also curious then, with the connection with what you were saying earlier about how these non-ordinary states can support trauma healing, and then the practices were more about integrating that, it sounded like. So I'm wondering if you can say a bit about, yeah, combining the going into those states, and then the integration and the need for ordinary states as well, maybe we'll call them.
Yeah, thank you. I love how you summarize everything and care so much about listeners. Such a great choice of host, I would say. And coming back to your question is about integration. Yes, I think when we are experiencing non-ordinary states, it's when we go to retreat, for example, or we go to this one-time session and wow, the world is amazing. I'm unity, I'm love, all of that. Or maybe you discover something so profound. But how then you come back and you meet your husband and you need to wash dishes and in the morning there is work to do. So I think that most of the spiritual teachers, they also teach spirituality that is shown in relationships with others, with things, with yourself. So I think that relational aspect is really what could give you clues of, first of all, what is it that need to be integrated? Where do you feel that you are disconnected? Maybe if you feel disconnected with yourself, just ask yourself in that moment, what do I need right now? How can I support myself right now? And be that compassionate adult and self-parent in that moment and just practice it daily, a moment. What do I need right now? I think that could be a gentle integration of all these discoveries. For example, daily practice could also include a little bit of this non-ordinary states. So for example, breath work could be divided into different formats. It could be small format, medium, and a long format. As my teacher actually like created the system, and small format is just one breath at a time, as I was showing, breath of relief, like cleansing breath. And you're already resetting your nervous system with just one single breath. There is medium format, which is like all pranayamas, 5 to 10 minutes of practicing box breathing, Wim Hof style practice, or whatever that you resonated with. Having it as a daily routine, I think, would create that remembrance of coming back. I could feel right now present. I could feel whole in this moment. And it will create that resilience and more of emotional balance, so you can be less emotionally triggered with something happens. And of course, if you can, working with someone, I think, for me, it's like one of the most profound experiences working one-on-one. That's why I think I chosen it as a primarily a practice, although I do workshops and retreats. But when you work with someone one-on-one, I think it's there is an element of consistency. There is an element of like keeping your own questions and how you can inquire into them. So this consistent inquiry, I think, could be really good for integration. And if you experience something profound during whether it's plant medicine retreat, breath work, or hypnotherapy, or something else, or even during this conference, you have realization, you can write down these questions or just a little bit of these memories, let it settle. You don't need to integrate all of it, but maybe there is something that awakened in you, or maybe something bothered you. So just allow yourself to question, like inquire, what is there for me to explore? What part of me resonated with that, or maybe felt resistance? What is that resistance, or what is that curiosity? And just following that curiosity or resistance, I think, would give a lot of answers. I hope that it answers a little bit of your question.
Absolutely. I really appreciate the emphasis on self-inquiry, right? On asking oneself, I had that realization, and bringing in the element of curiosity, asking oneself questions, writing them down, writing down insights, and again, following one's own path and thread. And then ideally also having someone who can guide that inquiry, right? Like a practitioner, a teacher, a guide, whoever it is. So I really appreciate everything you brought in today, Elsu. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we end here for today?
I just want to emphasize also what you said about this like as many teachers bring so many much information and practices and modalities, I think the moment you start choosing one thing that suits you, there is also that element of trust in yourself. And I believe that this skill that we all or most of us forgot or were not thought, we were thought to follow someone, to follow authority like parent, teacher, guru. So right now, if you even will trust yourself to choose the practice that you want to start with, I think that would be a great and great journey toward wholeness, towards your authenticity, because trust is one of the elements of that.
Yeah, I really appreciate how you bring in that piece about that inner guidance, right? And like learning to trust oneself and how that capacity can grow as well over time, I think is so important. So, Alzu, thank you for bringing all these beautiful and important elements. How can people find out more about you and your work?
Oh, thank you for this question. Yeah, I have my website, alsukashapova.com, and I have a free dash call link. So I think I usually give lots of free sessions as well for people to experience it first, or if you have a specific question. And there are lots of materials as well that you can find on my website or on Instagram.
Fantastic. And are you taking on clients at the moment?
Yes, I am.
Brilliant. But thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jai.